Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of The Love of Cinema, a Picture House podcast brought to you by Kia. My name's Hope, I'm your host for today, and I'm really, really excited to share with you a chat that I had with the lovely Gil Kanan, director of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Frozen Empire is a follow-up to 2021's Ghostbusters Afterlife, which together explore the legacy of the Spangler family and how they come to terms with their new identity as Ghostbusters. We talked about all things from the film's amazing cast, to inner child therapy, to Picture House's dog-friendly screenings, so you're in for a real treat with this one. Without further ado, here's my chat with Gil. Hope you enjoy.
I've been waiting 40 years for this. They called themselves Ghostbusters. According to these hacks, they saved the world. And who is found to carry the torch? Descendants of Egon Spengler. You have a miner hanging out the side of a moving vehicle, firing a laser gun indiscriminately.
It has a proton pack.
It's completely safe.
I wouldn't say completely safe.
The Ghostbusters are finished.
Right. Well, overruled.
Sustained.
Thank you.
Hello, Gil.
Hi.
My name is Hope. Welcome to the Picture House podcast. We're here, obviously, to talk about your film, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the follow-up to 2021's Afterlife. How are you doing? How are things?
I'm doing really well. I am happy to be back home in London.
Yes.
This is the last stop on our global tour.
Great.
It started last week. It feels like 3 years ago in New York City, of course, the home of Ghostbusters, but also the place where we premiered the film globally. And it's been so wonderful touring the world and meeting Ghostbusters fans.
Great. I thought you were going to say meeting Ghostbusters.
Meeting ghosts.
Meeting ghosts all
wherever
around.
I go.
Ooh.
Now they know that I can make them a star, so they just, you
it's
know,
true. And hey,
throw
there's
themselves
a lot of history in the UK. You're going to meet a lot of old buildings,
definitely.
You know?
Way more dead people than America, that's
they're
for
in
sure.
The walls. Cool. On that note, I'd like to take it back to the start. I think it's very clear from watching Frozen Empire that it's a film made with so much love and reverence and sincere affection for the original film. I think I'm right in thinking you were 8 when it first came out. In 1984, the original.
Give me that one extra year. I was 7 years
You're
old.
Sorry.
It was still like it still stays with me as a really defining moment in my young film-going life. And I just moved to America. I remember going with my father to see it in a big Hollywood movie theater, and it was a really special experience.
How do you think 7-year-old Gil would feel knowing that you were to direct your own Ghostbusters film?
I think he would take it all in stride. He would be like, of course that's what I get. No. It would blow our minds. We would be stuck in a feedback loop of just open mouth, just wonder at the fact that A, we still have hair, and B, we got to direct a Ghostbusters film. These stories, these characters that have meant so much to us all these years.
That's really lovely. Do you think his vision of it would be the same as your vision for this film?
First of all, I'd like to just continue to refer myself as we, include 7-year-old Gil in every conversation
He's
going
in the room
forward.
With us now.
I feel protective and proud of both of us. Would he be sort of honoring the same vision or going after the same vision? I think the answer is absolutely yes. I think that in every instance, especially tonally with this film, what I'm thinking back to is exactly that balance of horror and comedy as it played for me as a young movie lover. And so when I'm thinking of how to create that sort of distinct balance that a Ghostbusters film needs to have between what's scary and what's funny, it's often 7-year-old me that I'm channeling.
Great, I love that. This is inner child therapy, basically. Great.
My entire career is some version of that.
Cheers to that. Great. I think it's like, obviously, it's a Ghostbusters film first and foremost, but I think from right as it opens with a Robert Frost poem and into 1904, was it?
Yeah,
it feels like, you know, that's not how you expect a Ghostbusters film to open. And I think from the get-go, it just felt like such a clear, distinct directorial voice all over it. And obviously, you were involved with Afterlife as exec producer and writer,
yes,
if I'm right in
correct.
Saying. But how was it kind of taking the directorial reins of this, and how, I guess, did you manage navigating such a beloved franchise and films as Ghostbusters, but also kind of putting your voice at the front and center?
Well, I think that as a storyteller, obviously, there is no greater thrill than telling a story with characters that you care about. In every instance, the way that I survived the task of making a film within a series of stories that's so beloved is by focusing in on character and thinking about doing right by those characters, respecting them, and the arc that I would want for them as a fan first. And I think that the other version of that could become really overwhelming if you're thinking about it in terms of the mammoth weight of responsibility that could land on any director's shoulders. You know, whether your last name is Reitman or not, it really can be too much. And so I'm very lucky that Jason Reitman, who is my co-writer on this film and who produced this film, has such an important, meaningful connection to this franchise, both through his father, Ivan Reitman, and from directing the previous film, Afterlife. So in that way, I never felt like I was sort of alone at sea, carrying the entire weight of the universe. I did feel like a very important voice in this world was always right there with me, supporting me, and actually allowing those moments where, as you say, my own voice as a storyteller was able to come through to the screen.
That's really beautiful.
Thanks.
What a lovely answer. I think something, I think you mentioned this earlier with what you said, that your inner child, who is in the room with us now, of course, saw in the original Ghostbusters, but I think it definitely felt like a scarier take on the film.
First of all, don't look now, but he's standing right behind you.
Oh my God, okay. I feel his breath on my neck.
Just slow movements.
Okay.
I will say that it was a goal of mine as we started to write this film to up the stakes. We created a stage for Phoebe Spangler in the first film to create a sort of a way for her to find her footing as a Ghostbuster, start to figure out what her identity was in this world and within her own family. In this film, it was time to now start to test some of those discoveries as part of her arc as a character, and that test took the nightmarish form of Garaka, the villain in this film, and I'm really proud of the genre and horror that Garaka brings into this film with his horns.
For the first time in New York history, a room full of people froze to death in July.
If it's an unimaginable evil with the power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
I think, I mean, as someone who is still occasionally haunted by Monster House,
oh,
having
thanks.
Seen it very young, it felt very true to kind of what I expected from, I guess, your take on the film. And I think, like you said, the stakes couldn't have been higher. The universe was quite literally ripping apart. Yeah, I guess it also kind of felt quite theatrical in ways. There were scenes that very much felt like off the stage, especially I'm thinking of when Garaka kind of entered the firehouse and the lighting was so beautiful
Thank you.
So evocative. How, I guess, do you have, I'm already thinking you've got a bit of a theatrical background there?
I do, yeah. I have sort of a sordid history with the theater because I tried to mount a play when I was a teenager, when I was in high school, and that play was literally ripped from the earth in the largest earthquake that happened in my lifetime in the Northridge earthquake. It's actually the second time I'm talking about earthquakes, and it's not the same earthquake, which shows
wow.
that I've really grown up in Los Angeles.
But
this earthquake actually destroyed the set and the entire building where I was about to launch my first big outing as a stage director. And I swore in that moment, as a 17-year-old, that I would never do a play again. So the way that I approach moments of heightened storytelling, as you say, the sort of theatrical moments like Garaka's arrival to the firehouse, it's definitely with, and I look at a Ghostbusters film, I think almost has not an expectation, but the greatest opportunity to create something that can get close to an operatic level of good versus evil. I do love those moments where these characters that are sort of oddball human characters who have
kind of found each other or are struggling to make connections between each other have to somehow coalesce into something more cohesive, something more heroic, because of the kind of classic confrontation that the adversary forces into their lap.
Totally, and I guess I hate to make what sounds like a very traumatic event seem poetic, but I mean, I guess it's a manifestation of all of those feelings almost.
Yeah, I try not to think too much about it, but I do obviously draw on all of the creative and more terrifying moments of my life to try to find a natural way into a story.
Let's go somewhere new. See worlds we've never seen before, so that we can feel inspired. Whether you're sitting in a cinema or in one of our cars, inspiration comes when we feel something new. That's why our electrified range is designed to take you on inspiring journeys. Kia, proud supporter of independent cinema. Kia, movement that inspires.
Speaking of a natural way into the story, like you've mentioned, it has a huge ensemble cast with so many returning Ghostbusters. Obviously, you've got Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, and then the incredible duo of Carey Coon and Paul Rudd, their dynamic is just great. It's amazing. And then obviously so many new faces as well. How, especially in those huge scenes where they all do coalesce, how did you juggle as a director kind of navigating so many characters and giving credence to every single one of their stories?
I'm always at the cusp of losing my voice in those moments. It's me standing on a chair, holding my hands above my head like a raka, trying to use supernatural terror to help to inspire the actors.
Great.
In those moments. Those were some of the most thrilling moments for me to create on set, actually. I think that the moments where you're making it, you have to think about there's two stories. The first story is always the big picture. What is happening in the scene? What does the adversary want? What do our heroes want? How do those two things collide? Because in there is the basic drama of the thing. But then there's always a second layer of story, and that second layer of story is the individual needs and wants of these characters and what each of them is hoping to, whether it's stated or unstated, get to by the end of this adventure, and what are the obstacles that each of them are independently facing. You sort of have to be aware of both at the same time, and especially with so many characters. I will say that one of the things that helps is understanding that there is one primary driver for all of that arc making or storytelling, and that is the emotional story at the center of this film. We've touched a little bit on Phoebe. The other side of it is this question of the Spangler family. Will they manage to hold the center? Each of them is pulling, for various reasons, in one direction or another, at least searching for a way to define themselves as something, whether it's Ghostbusters or a family or what have you. And so you think about that and you think about the forces at play that may challenge all of those elements.
Yeah, totally. I think not a member of the Spangler family, but somebody I was very excited to see was James Acaster, who is so beloved here in the UK. I mean, partly for his podcast work, of course.
I love his podcast.
So good. When's your episode coming?
I haven't done one. I'm too passionate about food. I don't think it would go well.
It would end badly, sure. How did you come about working with James? It was just a delight to see someone who is, like I said, so beloved here in the UK.
You're so nice to hear a normal accent for once in the movie, full of strange, exotic accents.
These guys. Here's someone I can understand.
I finally understand the words that are being said.
Ah, this is Ghostbusters, yes.
James, I've been a fan of James for years. I saw him performing a stand-up on stage in at Soho Theater years ago. Yeah. I am a fan of his podcast. It's actually one of the only podcasts I listen to religiously.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like I get my culture of food and pop culture in one fell swoop.
It's great.
And comedy. And I actually actually worked with him on my previous film, On a Boy Called Christmas. Yes. He was part of the writer's room that helped with the comedy punch-ups that I usually do before I go off to make something. And I remember sort of clocking him because his voice was so singular. Mm-hmm. And Jason has been a fan of his for years as well. When we wrote this character, it just started to feel like this was the inevitable voice that we had been searching for.
Absolutely. And he was great. It was a delight. You mentioned Jason and obviously talked about him before. Your partnership is one that has spanned many years. Obviously, this film was dedicated to his father, Ivan Reitman. And super exciting that you guys are working together for SNL 1975, mm-hmm. which is exciting. I would love to hear about how you guys met, how you guys worked together, and I guess anything you can tell us about.
Yeah, I'll tell you the sordid story because actually our meeting was one of the strangest friend meetings I've ever had in my life.
Great.
It happened in the way that I'm sure you're imagining exactly right now we would have met, which was in a locker room lacing up ice skates.
Of course. Ice, frozen, there we go.
I guess it was always meant to be. We were both at the start of our careers. This was almost 20 years ago, not quite. And yeah, I guess 18 or 19 years ago. Mm-hmm. And both of us had just started making our first films. But we didn't know any of that yet at the time. We both decided to go play a nighttime pickup ice hockey game, which is something that actually neither of us was doing very much of at the time. It was the last time I played a sport ever in my life was that night. It was a means to an end. But I went because making Monster House was so exciting and stressful, and I felt like I needed to go hit something and skate on some ice. And I ended up in that locker room a bit late, and so it was Jason. And as we were lacing up, we introduced each other, and then one of us asked, "What do you do?" And I remember saying, I'm making my first movie. I'm just editing it over here at Sony. And Jason was like, "Huh, no kidding. I'm making my first movie too." And I mean, it's a very Los Angeles story, but it's
nowhere else in the world you've had that conversation.
But even in Los Angeles, it's never happened to me before or since. And it was the beginning of a conversation that we're still having. It was always based on a foundation of loving movies, wanting to talk about them more than anything else. We have daughters that are about 1 year apart, and when our daughters were quite young, we started going on camping trips together, the four of us, and then we started inviting some other dads and kids to join. But in every single one of those trips, Jason and I and our daughters would drive together to wherever the camping site was, and it would always be 2 to 3 hours of telling stories together. And that naturally evolved into what became Ghostbusters Afterlife, which now has evolved unnaturally into Frozen Empire.
Great. Amazing. That's a really great story. Is there anything you can tell us about SNL set 1975?
I mean, I can tell you that it's where I'm going next.
Great.
So no sooner do we open this movie globally tonight, then next week I am flying to Atlanta, where that film is based. The studios are based there. It had its first day of principal photography yesterday. So the collapsing of the universe that's going on right now between this, our biggest collaboration, and SNL, which is a film I'm ridiculously excited about. It's writing that script was a process of exhaustive research. We had dozens of interviews with everyone who was still alive who worked on that first night of groundbreaking television, and I've never felt so moved and inspired after a round of conversations to commit words to a page.
Amazing. Well, yes, we're all very excited here as well.
Now,
one last thing. We are Picture House. We're cinemas. I know you mentioned before that you've been to Picture House Central.
Yes.
And we are very excited to be playing Ghostbusters Frozen Empire on our screens. We're, in fact, having a dog-friendly screening at one of our new cinemas. I don't know if you're familiar with our dog-friendly screenings.
You're not telling me anything new.
Great.
I spent hours yesterday talking to people about the dog-friendly screening of my movie, and I have two beloved dogs here in London. I'm contemplating heavily a visit to the dog-friendly screening of the movie. I was thinking of all the ways that a dog can be entertained by the film. I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see how it plays there. And yeah, I'm a fan of the Picture House chain, and my last experience in a Picture House cinema was seeing Oppenheimer projected in 70mm at the Picture House Central location. And I felt like it was a pure cinematic experience, both on the screen and off. It was so nice to sit in that room and feel the whir of the projector behind my head. It was a blast.
Totally. Well, we'd be very excited to welcome you for our dog-friendly screening. I guess just one final thing. Why is it important to you that people come and see Ghostbusters Frozen and buy it in a cinematic environment? Why is the cinema the place for it?
I think there are certain kinds of films that really demand a communal experience. I think comedies are always better in a theatrical setting with other people around you. And I think horror movies are also better.
Exactly.
And a Ghostbusters film is the perfect marriage between those two audience-intensive modes of storytelling. So I can't think of a film that cries out more for a communal theatrical experience than this one.
Incredible. Thank you.
Thank you.
For your time of your film, and we'll see you at the movies.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I love the chat.